story so far, if you were here last time. Moses was somewhere out in the middle of nowhere looking after a herd of sheep when God spoke to him out of a bush. We're in Exodus chapter 3. And I'm going to start at verse 7. Exodus 3, verse 7. And Jehovah said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people that are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land into a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanite, etc. And now, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me. Moreover, I have seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee, that's Moses, unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Moses is not at all confident about taking on this assignment. So, moving down to verse 13, and Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto your children of Israel, and I shall say unto them, the God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am, in capital letters. And he said, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. And God said moreover unto Moses, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, Jehovah, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. One thing struck me there, back in verse 8, is that God announces that he's decided what is going to happen. Trump went off to Singapore to negotiate with Kim Jong, what's his name? But he kept saying before he went, we don't know how it's going to work out. We've done a lot of preparation. We hope it works well, but we shall see. So nobody knew the outcome of those talks in Singapore, including Trump and Kim Jong, what's his name? This is the way human affairs happen. Human history can only be written looking backwards. But Jehovah announces in advance that he's going to deliver his people. A key to understanding this principle, which operates throughout Scripture, is found in Isaiah chapter 46 at verse 9. Isaiah 46, verse 9. Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is none else. I am God. There's that I am again. And there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. We humans see our lives as a sequence of events. Yesterday I did this. This morning I've done this so far. This afternoon I plan to do this, tomorrow I plan to do that. With us, only the past is unchangeable. My plans for this afternoon and tomorrow could be disrupted by a whole host of unforeseen circumstances. But with God, the future is as unchangeable as the past. God is sending Moses, an Israelite nobody, to negotiate with the world's most powerful monarch and get him to agree to something he has no intention of agreeing to, namely the liberation of his very valuable slave labor force. Pharaoh believes he holds all the cards. But Jehovah has already decided on his complete defeat and humiliation. So moving forward to Exodus chapter 5. Exodus chapter 5 at the beginning. And afterwards Moses and Aaron came and said unto Pharaoh, "Thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is Jehovah that I should hearken unto his voice to let Israel go? I know not Jehovah, and moreover, I will not let Israel go." Now the Egyptians had dozens of gods, but Jehovah was not one of them. Pharaoh is unimpressed by the name of Jehovah. That is all going to change in the next few weeks. In our age, negotiations between political leaders are presented as purely secular events. There's been no talk in the press about the gods of Trump and the USA versus the gods of Kim and North Korea. This simply doesn't arise. But in the ancient Near East, the gods of the opposing parties were believed to be very much involved in all conflicts. Arnold Fruchtenbaum said when he came here a few weeks ago that when two armies were in battle, they believed a parallel battle was going on up in the heavenlies above their heads. And it was largely whichever gods proved to be the more powerful that actually determined the outcome of the physical battle going on at ground level. Now, as intermediaries between the king and Egypt's gods were Pharaoh's wise men and sorcerers, as they're called. Now, we remember in Joseph's time, an earlier Pharaoh had his magicians and wise men who were unable to tell him his dream, if you remember. Later, Daniel the prophet would come up against Belshazzar's conjurers, Chaldeans, and diviners. The titles change, but they are all occultic practitioners practicing satanic arts. So then, these are the parties to the upcoming conflict. Pharaoh, his magicians, and the gods of Egypt on one side, and on the other side were Moses and his brother Aaron, and Jehovah. So Moses gets a meeting with Pharaoh, and at their second meeting, Pharaoh challenges Moses to work a miracle. He throws his stick down and it turns into a snake. Jehovah had rehearsed this sign with Moses back at the burning bush. Pharaoh's sorcerers did the same trick, but Moses' snake eats up the sorcerer's snakes. Pharaoh refuses to let the people go. Moses strikes the water in the Nile with his rod, and it turns into blood. Having spent many years in water pollution control in my working life, I can tell you that blood is a wonderful liquid, but you do not want it in a river. Needless to say, all the fish died, and the country's principal drinking water resource became unusable. The sorcerers did the same trick, presumably with water elsewhere in the country. Now, the last thing that the Egyptians needed at this point was more blood in their watercourses. It would have been better if they had turned the blood in the Nile back into water. But it's apparent from this example and others that Satanists can use occult powers to perform miracles, but they cannot undo a miracle of God. Only God could turn the water in the Nile from blood back into water again. Pharaoh continued to dig his heels in. A plague of frogs followed. The sorcerers again reproduced the frog's miracle. And one can imagine the Egyptians saying, "Thanks a million. Just what we needed, another 500,000 frogs in our houses." But the magicians had reached their limit at this point. There followed a sequence of plagues of number 3, flies, number 4, lice, number 5, an anthrax-like plague on their cattle, Number six, boils all over the Egyptian skin. Number seven, thunder and lightning so severe, thunder and hail so severe that cattle in the open air were killed. Number eight, a swarm of locusts which consumed every piece of vegetation, and a period of total darkness for 3 days. By the end of the ninth plague, Jehovah had demonstrated his complete control over his creation. The Egyptians had dozens of gods, gods of the Nile, gods of the fish in the Nile, gods of farming, gods of the weather, gods of the sun and the moon. The plagues had shown up all these gods as being powerless against Jehovah in the areas they were supposed to be responsible for. The god of the fish in the Nile had been unable to prevent the death of all the fish in the Nile. The gods of the sun could not prevent 3 days of darkness. And so it went on. Furthermore, the pharaohs presented themselves to their people as gods in human form. Pharaoh's credibility as a god-man was in tatters by the end of the ninth plague. This was Jehovah's plan from the start. He said in chapter 6, Exodus 6, verse 1, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do for Pharaoh, for under compulsion he will let them go, and under compulsion he will drive them out of his land.'" Since when is a God-man subject to compulsion? And then moving on to Exodus 7, verse 2. "Thou shalt speak all that I command thee, and Aaron thy brother shall speak unto Pharaoh, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt." Now, this hardening Pharaoh's heart is a phrase which recurs several times in this section. Jehovah is not just producing these signs and wonders, he's actually manipulating Pharaoh's decision-making processes. He's getting into his mind so that he doesn't act in a rational or a wise way, but just is obstinate, and so he causes this endless sequence of suffering to come on his people. Jehovah is in total control of events from beginning to end. He's in control of what is said, how Pharaoh reacts, and the plagues that come on them one after the other. We don't very often see that in the Bible. Mostly God just lets us get on with things and make a mess of the world we live in. But occasionally, as for example at the flood, and here, and right at the end in Revelation, he takes complete control and manages the whole situation from beginning to end for his own purposes and for his own glory. We now come to the 10th and last plague, and we've now got to chapter 11 of Exodus. This is by far the worst one. "And Jehovah said unto..." Exodus 11:1. "And Jehovah said unto Moses, 'Yet one more plague will I bring upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt, and afterwards he will let you go hence. When he shall let you go, he shall surely thrust you out hence altogether.'" So after the 10th plague, Pharaoh will not just let them go, he will actually kick them out. Verse 4, "And Moses said, 'Thus saith Jehovah, about midnight will I go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sitteth upon his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of cattle. And there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there hath not been, nor shall there be any more.'" Moving down to verse 12, "For I will go through the land of Egypt in that night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am Jehovah." God is executing judgments against the gods of Egypt just as much as the leader of Egypt and its people. So as usual in these passages, what we first get is a prophetic statement by God as to what he's going to do, and then we move on to the actual events happening. Moving down to verse 29 in Exodus 12, 29. And it came to pass at midnight that Jehovah smote all the firstborn of the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And he called Moses and Aaron by night and said, Rise up, get you forth from among my people, both ye and the children of Israel, and go serve Jehovah as ye have said. Take both your flocks and your herds as ye have said, and be gone. And bless me also. So there it is. Moses has got everything he asked for and much more. He only asked for a few days in the wilderness to hold a sacrifice. But the Israelites are now being permanently thrown out of Egypt, which is what Jehovah said all the way back would happen at the burning bush. So these plagues lead up to the Israelites being free to walk away from their slavery and to set out on their way to the Promised Land, which takes them a good deal longer than anyone had expected. It takes them a whole generation, in effect. They are the lead up to a miraculous deliverance. When we look at the plagues and the Exodus, we think of deliverance. There are so many parallels with Jesus' deliverance of us later on. At the burning bush, Jehovah had announced the time had come to liberate his people, the Israelites, from bondage in Egypt. And he recruited Moses to be his agent. There was never any uncertainty about the final outcome. They would be liberated, and they would set out for the Promised Land. God declares the end from the beginning. This is confirmed with the recurring formula, I am Jehovah, which is often repeated in it. I am God, or I am Jehovah, is a sign that this is something important which God has decided and which is going to happen. Jehovah not only controlled the final outcome, but every stage of Pharaoh's resistance and his final submission. The pattern of these chapters is that Jehovah gives Moses the words to use to Pharaoh. Moses says what he's been told to say. Pharaoh digs his heels in, and a plague falls on them. Jehovah then causes Pharaoh to harden his heart again, opening up the way for the next plague. God's object in causing these plagues to fall on the Egyptians is to judge the Egyptians for their persecution of the Israelites by their submission in slavery. Secondly, to magnify the name of Jehovah as the all-powerful God, making a complete mockery of the pagan gods of Egypt and of the fake God-man Pharaoh. There will only ever be one God-man, and his name is Jesus of Nazareth. Finito.